The Irish rowers' gold medal win in Tokyo this morning came too late for the papers, but Ireland's first medal winners of this year's Olympic Games are pictured on the front pages of the Irish Independent, Irish Times, Irish Examiner, Irish Daily Mirror and Irish Daily Star. Ralph Regal reports in The Independent that the four who won bronze in Tokyo, Afric Kyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty, only came together 18 months ago, after rowing chiefs and club coaches came up with the idea of combining four of Ireland's outstanding female rowers in a heavyweight boat crew. Regal says that what proved truly astonishing was how quickly the four women managed to combine into a world-class quartet. A nation rejoices with our history makers in Tokyo, says The Independent in an editorial. Awesome foursome, says The Star. Or heroes, says The Mirror. The Independent leads with a report that the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, has raised hope for an early lifting of COVID restrictions, as new data shows that the young are now hardest hit by coronavirus infections. Professor Philip Nolan, chair of the Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group, is quoted as saying, "This is, at the moment, very much a disease of younger people." The Irish Daily Mail's lead story concentrates on what the paper calls Dr. Houlihan's upbeat assessment and carries the headline, "Freedom is not far away." The Examiner highlights a warning to parents from the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, that they brace themselves for misinformation about childhood vaccines as the vaccination programme for 12 to 15-year-olds starts. He said that parents would be a target in the next 2 to 3 weeks, particularly through social media. The Irish Sun leads with a story about Derek Hutch, due to be released from prison shortly. The Star's main story is about Dave Mahon, who was released from prison yesterday after serving a 5-year sentence for the manslaughter of his stepson, Dean Fitzpatrick. The live entertainment and music sectors are in danger of collapsing following prolonged restrictions, and a clear plan for their return is needed. That's the message in a letter from the Minister for Culture and the Arts, Catherine Martin, to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, as The Times reports. The Times says that the letter calls for active engagement on how to reopen the sectors using digital COVID certificates or some form of COVID testing, and that when Ms. Martin raised the matter at Cabinet this week, she was backed by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, and the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, committed himself to examining the issue.
It was one of those special nights for Ireland and Cork. On the water in Tokyo, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy powered their way into the history books, picking up gold in the men's lightweight double sculls final. It's only the 10th ever gold medal for Ireland in the history of the Summer Games, and it was done in style with the men from Skibbereen edging out Germany, who had pushed them all the way. Let's go to Tokyo now and talk to Des Cahill. Des, good morning. They wear it lightly, don't they? But these really are once-in-a-generation athletes.
That's for sure. And I like the way you got in the Cork bit as well in the intro. They do wear it very lightly, but they have written their names in the history books with a stunning performance. It was part of what's been a great day. We've had a win and a second place in sailing and a heartbreaking defeat for Sunita Pushpure, Justin. But as you say, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy lighting up the games for Ireland. The Irish duo living up to their favourites tag. They powered their way to victory, edging out Germany, who pushed them all the way, with Italy finishing in third place. This was the gold medal performance.
1500 metres, 500 to go. Ireland in the gold medal position. Germany have eased back. And now we're into the final 500 metres. And McCarthy and O'Donovan are in front and heading for history. Italy third place, but well off the pace. The gold medal will be decided between Ireland and Germany. And it's Ireland who have the noses in front now. It's nip and tuck. The Germans know they're under pressure, but O'Donovan and McCarthy are edging ahead slightly faster than the Germans at this stage, which is telling. They put everything into the start, the Germans. They hope to get enough of an advantage to keep them in front, but that doesn't reckon with the consistency of Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, who now have a decisive lead of a canvas, and they're on their way. 250 metres to go, and history is being made in Tokyo. It's Ireland from Germany for the gold medal in the lightweight men's double sculls. It's McCarthy and O'Donovan writing history for Ireland. Never before has Ireland won a gold medal in rowing. And this is going to be another historic day on the water for Irish rowing. As Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan come home in front, their long, consistent, unbeaten record continued when it mattered most. They're home and hosed by a length. It's Ireland from Germany, and history is made on the water in Tokyo as Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan win gold. Gold for Ireland. Gold for Ireland. Silver for Germany. And the Italians come home in third place. And that is one more chapter of magnificence from the men from County Cork.
It certainly was. George Hamilton describing the drama, and after their glorious win, Fintan and Paul spoke with Claire McNamara, who suggested that their tactic of holding a steady pace while the Germans and Italians attacked early ultimately paid off.
I think so, yeah. That's the race plan we had. And we do it all the time, like, and it seems to work okay for us. And we kind of know that Italy and Germany always go hard, like, you can count on that. And then they slow down a bit, so once we're catching up to them, then we kind of knew that we were in a sustainable pace and kept going. But Germany made it hard for sure.
Yeah.
You really do it all the time. You came in here as the hottest of favourites, Fintan, but you handled it really well with your humour and everything, your laid-back attitude. But behind that, obviously, you're fierce, fierce competitors.
Yeah, I've kind of been thinking about it all day. It's bizarre. I've been pretty chilled out. Usually, I'd be a bit more nervous than this. I guess I just felt really prepared. And you know how that expectation and stuff doesn't really weigh too heavily on us. We just do what we always do and the best we can, and it works, I guess.
You have such a collection of medals. Paul, you have the Olympic silver, obviously, from back in Rio, but now the gold that you really wanted, it's a really precious prize.
I suppose it's fine, yeah. I mean, you don't really think about the medal itself. Like, we're just there trying to be the best we can be, and hopefully it'll be the best of the rest of them, and it seems to be that today it was, so be pleased with that. Like.
Fantastic stuff. And we'll be joined live here in our Tokyo studio by Fintan and Paul on Morning Ireland after 8:30. Now, I cannot emphasise the contrast in mood between the exhilarating high of the lads' gold medal and the bitter, devastating sense of disappointment which followed almost immediately afterwards when Sunita Pushpore, favourite in the women's single sculls, only finished fifth in her semi-final, and so Ireland's former European and world champion is not in tomorrow's final. It was agony for Sunita. She's now 39 and really has given her life to the sport and her Olympic dream. She's originally from Latvia, as people know, but the mother of two lives with her family in Ballincollig in Cork, both of her children born in Ireland, where she moved in 2006 with her husband Casper. She's the woman who has bridged the turnaround in Irish rowing's fortunes. Imagine, she was the only Irish rower at the London Olympics in 2012, and now, despite European and world championships in between, she has suffered heartbreak at both Rio and now here in Tokyo. This year she was affected by illness and by injury. Had it been last year, I'm sure she would have won it, but this devastating disappointment, she couldn't even do an interview afterwards. But Irish rowing's team manager Fergal O'Callaghan summed up the disappointment.
I have tears of joy for the boys and tears of sadness for Sunita. Real bittersweet in one race coming after the other. I know Antonio and the coaches will meet with her. She's got a race tomorrow. They'll meet with her and they'll do an analysis and see what needs to be improved for tomorrow. I can't imagine how she feels, to be honest myself. I feel devastated for her.
And just a word then on our gold medalists, first ever gold medal in rowing for Ireland. They've just been so incredible throughout this whole tournament, haven't they?
Yeah, they're unbelievable. Yeah, they really, really are. Claire, I started rowing in the mid-1980s. And I did a few years on the lightweight squad before the lads were probably out of nappies. And most of us back in Ireland at that time probably thought we'd never see a medal, never mind a gold medal. So it's just absolutely fantastic. But I said, pity about the race that came behind it.
It certainly was. And we had others in action in rowing. Aileen Crowley and Monica Dukarska finished fifth in the B final in the women's pair for an 11th place overall ranking. And Aoife Casey and Margaret Cremin had a strong showing in the B final of the lightweight women's double sculls, finishing second to Switzerland, 8th place ranking overall. Now in sailing, what a day we've had here so far. We've had a win and a second place. The action's still going on. But a big win in race 7 for Annalise Murphy. Picking herself up after the first 2 days wasn't easy. the odds of a medal stacked against her, but she's fighting hard. She's currently sixth in race eight, so a huge improvement for Annalise Murphy. And the Irish pair of Sean Wadilove and Robert Dixon have given their hopes of making the 49er medal race a major boost. They finished second in the fifth of 12 races in the event, behind Denmark. The results saw Ireland move up to eighth place overall, and they've now finished sixth in race six, and that brings them up to seventh place overall. It's day one of the Olympics golf, and here too, high hopes for the Irish with Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry on the team, but the weather is impacting. Let's go live to the course and join Gary Moran.
Yeah, well, the conditions were ideal at the start of the day, as long as you don't mind a humid 28 degrees. That's what prevailed at Kasumi Kaseki Country Club. There was almost no breeze, and the American-like parkland course is in immaculate condition. It's long but not overly penal. The Austrian Sepp Straka, playing in the opening three ball, took full advantage with eight birdies and no drop shots in an 8-under par 63, but it's been fairly ho-hum for the Irish duo. Rory McIlroy was 2-under after 4, but is now 1-under playing the 14th, tied 30th. Shane Lowry 1-under until the 12th. He's just bogeyed that, and that's when he had to come in because lightning forced a suspension around 80 minutes ago. Lowry on level par. An update on the weather situation expected shortly.
All right, thanks, Gary. In judo, Ben Fletcher has been beaten in the 100K men's judo, beaten via Wazari by the Uzbeki Mohammed Kurimov. And Ben struggled to hide his disappointment when he spoke with Joe Stack.
There's not a lot of time out there. It's a brutal sport. Yeah, he started really strong and I conceded a point quite early on. Fine margins of this game, you know, like I couldn't get it back. I was able to put a bit of pressure on towards the end, but yeah, such is life.
Ben, Israel, February, a broken leg, and yeah. That's your first performance on the mat since, is that right?
Yeah, it was very touch and go whether I'd get it or not, so yeah, I'm here, you know, it took a lot to get here. I'm proud of that, anyway.
Tell me about the connections. Mam is from Brofton, County Limerick.
Yeah, Mum's from Brofton, County Limerick. And we've still got plenty of family in Brofton and in Dublin as well. So I might not have the accent, but I'm very proud to represent them. And yeah.
Tough on Ben Fletcher. Finally, in shooting, Derek Burnett's fifth appearance at an Olympics has just concluded. He has finished 26th in the men's trap qualifying. And Justin, we'll hand back to you. I know all Cork people will be claiming this victory. As a McCarthy, you can take extra pride and maybe bring us some reaction from Cork.
Absolutely, Des. It's a wonderful day for the McCarthys, everyone from Cork, and indeed for Ireland as well. Let's go to Skibbereen now to get reaction to that gold medal win by Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy on a momentous night for Ireland. Our reporter Gail Conway was in West Cork for the race and the celebrations which followed in the early hours of this morning, and she spoke with Fintan's sister Caitlin and parents Tom and Sue.
Go on, lad! Push it on! Gold medal, fellas!
Go Ireland, eh?
Tom and Sue, what are your feelings at the moment? It's so exciting.
It's overwhelming. Absolutely delighted. They've worked so hard and they were pushed and they delivered, and yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. There are no words to describe it. There are no words to...
Pride.
Pride, it just doesn't cover it. There's so much more than that.
Literally overwhelming. Yeah.
There was a lot of expectation on them to win. Did you think, I know you hoped they'd win, did you actually think they could do it?
Yeah, we hoped beyond hope that they would. They were on form, they've been on form all season, and it seems that no one could touch them. So we just hoped that that would be the case again today. And they didn't let us down.
I can only 100% agree, even though I had an intuitive feeling for a while now that they were going to do very well. So, yeah.
With the COVID restrictions, they'll be home now that they've finished competing in 48 hours, I believe, so you don't have too long to wait. Yeah. What's the first thing you hope to do when Fintan comes home?
Just give him a huge hug.
Yeah, say hi, big cuddle.
We're beyond proud. You know, Finn's had in his sights for a long time, and he did it.
We're a small country. We're punching so far above our weight. Yeah, it's totally inspiring, and I think they'll go on and do more.
Caitlin, your brother is now an Olympian. How does it feel?
Yes, it's crazy. I would have expected it when he started rowing, but, you know, when we were little, he was just never the sporty type. So for him to be an Olympic gold medalist, it's crazy. It's not something I would have imagined in a million years, to be honest.
How do you think he's achieved it? You said he wasn't even sporty.
Yeah, I just think, you know, he put his mind to it when he started rowing. He knew he wanted to be the best. You know, there was no other point in doing it, so he just went out and did what he always said he was going to do. So yeah, very proud of him.
So you watched the race here with your family this evening. Has your phone been hopping ever since?
Yeah, literally all my friends have been showing that they're watching it, sending me Snapchats being like, oh my god, it's so exciting. I know, it's just crazy, but yeah, no, it's been insane, the amount of people supporting and everything. It's crazy.
How do you think you'll celebrate even more than tonight when he comes home?
Oh god, me and mom were gonna attempt to make some kind of Olympic cake. I don't know how that's gonna go, but yeah, we'll see, and maybe decorate the house or whatever for him to come home. But yeah, I'm excited to see him now. It's good that they get to come home so fast. That's one good thing, I'd say.
What a moment.
What a moment.
Is that a tear in Paul's eye?
Absolutely wonderful to hear those sounds from Skibbereen in West Cork. Caitlin Fintan McCarthy's sister, along with parents Tom and Sue, speaking to Gail Conway there. And Fintan isn't the only roarer in the family. Gail also spoke with Fintan's twin brother Jake, another roarer with eyes on competing in the Olympics in the future after the stirring victory in Tokyo this morning.
Can't really believe it, to be honest. Yeah, it's speechless, really. Overjoyed and like emotional. Can't wait to get him home now, you know, and can't wait to see him.
You know all his processes and how he thinks, how he works. What did he do you think, that got him to this point?
I remember us kind of watching the Rio Olympics, you know, 4 years ago and talking about it. And I think ever since then, you know, something, I don't know, was it like a seed of belief or something was kind of planted in his head. And kind of ever since then, I guess just been, you know, daily kind of working on it day in, day out to get there.
Do you think it's going to help with your own motivation and inspiration as well to dig deeper and get to the Olympics yourself?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. Like literally watching that, it was almost like something flicked inside me, you know, just this desire and something I've never even experienced. Like it's just, you want to be there and you want to be experiencing, you know, and hopefully now, once I get the injury right, I can hopefully go and give my best shot at doing that.
And you have a new addition to the family, a young pup is here. What's his name? And he has joined the action as well.
Yeah, he's Alvia. He was giving you a bit of trouble there. I think he's in the other room, closed off there, barking away. But yeah, he watched the race with us, actually. Yeah, we put a t-shirt on him earlier and stuff. So we sent that to Finn, you know, before the race.
That was Fintan McCarthy's twin brother Jake speaking to Gail Conway there.
A report on the Northern Ireland Protocol from Britain's House of Lords has called on the UK and the EU to urgently restore trust between the two sides and accuses both sides of inflexibility. It warns that failure means Northern Ireland is destined to become a casualty of relations between Brussels and London. The protocol requires checks on some goods and services going from Britain to Northern Ireland to avoid customs checks on the border between here and the north of Ireland. The committee took evidence from business, academic, political and community interests from across Northern Ireland, Great Britain and the European Commission. The chair of the House of Lords Protocol on Ireland is Michael Jay, the Lord Jay of Uelm, and he's with us now. Michael Jay, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
In your view, does the protocol require renegotiation?
It certainly requires, it needs to be looked at again, and there needs to be some amendments to the protocol as it's been as it is now, and what we're finding is that there are real difficulties for people in Northern Ireland. There are real difficulties for businesses which are, particularly small businesses which are exporting to Northern Ireland or trying to export to Northern Ireland, and these are problems which need to be overcome. So there needs to be a good hard look by the European Union and by the British government at the protocol as it now is to find some ways of mitigating these difficulties.
The EU has now agreed to pause legal action over the protocol after Boris Johnson called for a standstill period. He says he wants all British-made goods destined for Northern Ireland to be exempt from checks, to introduce a dual regulatory system in place of the EU regulatory regime and to remove the oversight rule of European courts. What do you think of these proposals?
Well, I think it's a pretty far-ranging command paper that he's issued, and I think some of those go probably a bit further than the Commission is prepared to accept. But I think there does need to be a negotiation on some of those issues to find a way which will reduce the amount of friction there is between on trade between Britain and Northern Ireland. And I do think that there needs to be some flexibility, particularly over, for example, medical products, particularly over plant and animal health products. These are things which are causing real difficulties. And I don't think that when the protocol was originally agreed, then there was an acceptance that it would be quite as disruptive as it now is. So I think goodwill and trust and a good constructive negotiation between the two parties with a real commitment to come to an agreement is what we need. It isn't yet what we've got.
In your view, which has had the greater destabilizing effect on Northern Ireland, Brexit or the protocol?
Well, I think that one follows from the other. I think that Brexit has the effect of Brexit was to remove the. When Britain and Ireland were both in the European Union, then I won't say it was easier because none of this is easy, but it was less difficult to reach agreement on, for example, the Good Friday Agreement, and the fact of Brexit has made that harder. And the protocol was a necessary agreement to reach, but it is having implications now which are greater than were originally envisaged, and that's what we need to be looking at now. What the Commission and the Commission and Great Britain need to be looking at now to find a way through.
Michael J, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning. That's Michael J, Chair of the House of Lords Protocol on Ireland.
RTE Radio 1 Sport with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
Olympic gold and more. John Murray.
Good morning to you, Gavin. As you described it, a golden morning for Irish rowing and Irish sport. Pride of place, obviously, going to Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan, gold medal winners in the lightweight men's double sculls in Tokyo in the early hours of this morning. And it's Ireland's 10th gold medal at an Olympics Games, and a great reason for joy all round. Spare a thought, though, for another medal prospect, Sunita Puspuri, who finished 5th in her semi-final of the women's single sculls and will have to settle for a place in the B final. Aileen Crowley and Monica Dukarski finished 5th in the B final in the women's pair for an 11th place ranking overall, while Aoife Casey and Margaret Cremin had a strong showing in the B final of the lightweight women's double sculls, finishing 2nd to Switzerland and an 8th place ranking overall. Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry are well off the pace in the first round of the men's golf competition at the Kazumigasaki Country Club. Austrian Sepp Straka shot an 8 under par 63 to lead the way. McIlroy was on 1 under par after 14 and Larry on level par after 12 when lightning suspended play. In sailing, the Irish duo of Sean Waddilove and Robert Dixon have given their hopes of making the 49er medal race a major boost, with a 2nd place finished in the 5th of 12 races in the event. The result sees the move up to 8th overall. And in the laser radial class, good news of Annalise Murphy, who won race 7 in the series. In judo, disappointing for Ben Fletcher. He lost in the elimination round of the 100kg men's judo. In other sport, Bohemians and Dundalk in Europa Conference League action tonight. There will be a crowd of 8,000 at the Aviva Stadium for their 2nd leg tie against Dudelange of Luxembourg. The Gypsies carry a 1-0 lead from the first leg. Dundalk, meanwhile, are in Estonia, where they will take on Levadia Tallinn. The first leg finished 2-2 at Tallinn Stadium. Celtic are out of the Champions League after a 3-2 aggregate defeat to Midtjylland of Denmark. Despite Celtic going ahead through a Callum McGregor goal in last night's 2nd leg of the 2nd qualifying round tie, the teams drew 1-1 for an aggregate score of 2-2 before the Danish side scored an extra time winner. Celtic will now drop into the Europa League. Republic of Ireland international Seamus Coleman has signed a 1-year contract extension with Everton. The 32-year-old's new deal with the Goodison Park Club will run to the end of June 2023. Cork have retained the Munster under 20 hurling title. The success continues as you. In the final at Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Cork defeated Limerick by 126 to 124. The Electric Ireland Leinster Minor final ended Kilkenny 115, Wexford 210. And the results of the Ulster Minor football quarter finals were Armagh 12 points, Derry 11, Donegal 1-9, Monaghan 10 points, Fermanagh 1-12, Cavan 1-11, and Tyrone 3-16, down 9 points. On day 3 of the Galway Festival, Royal Rendezvous won the feature race, the Galway Plate. The 5-1 favourite, which was ridden by Paul Townend and trained by Willie Mullins, made up for having to settle for being runner-up to early doors in last year's renewal. Trainer Willie Mullins spoke to Dave Keenan.
Jumped fantastic, galloped the whole way, sort of with a choke out. I thought he was doing too much throughout the race, but his jumping was so good, Paul was able to give him a breather after a lot of the fences on the second circuit.
And his jumping, I thought, kept him in the race, but I thought even throughout the race, he never really put a foot wrong.
He didn't, he was electric, and you need to be when you're running that fast in front. If you make one mistake, you get hauled back into the pack and you don't get out of it again. But Paul was very, very sure on him, and he was very confident in his jumping, and he kept him there, and the horse answered all the calls that Paul asked.
That was Willie Mullins there talking to Dave Keane.
Now, locked up, locked in, locked out. A new report has been published highlighting the experience of older people during the pandemic. Telling It Like It Is outlines the loneliness and isolation experienced by some, the cocooning which went on too long, the loss of life and bereavements which disproportionately affected elderly people, and their loss of identity. In a moment, we'll be speaking to the CEO of one of the 7 organisations involved in the report about its findings. But first, our reporter Killian Sherlock has been speaking to 2 older people, Eugene Phillips and Angela Edgehill, about their experiences of the early stages of the pandemic.
It was frightening for the first 6 months. That word cocooning, I'd say, if you said it now to an older person, it'd probably run. I'm an active person, and I found it absolutely terrible. It was frustrating just sitting inside and looking out the window. But then again, there's the likes of Zoom and things like that. It's amazing. A lot of older people now have started to use things like that. I hope people have learned and seen what has happened now, and maybe the government could help older people to learn these technologies, that if ever something like this was to happen again, at least they can keep in contact with people.
The belief that somehow the deaths were, they were all over 80, as if older people's deaths didn't matter. There was a dismissiveness about this that kind of scared me a bit. It was a difficult time, and 3 of my very close friends were bereaved during COVID. That was very hard not to be able to see them. And then my husband got ill and was diagnosed with cancer and had to go to hospital, have an operation. I couldn't go near him for 11 days. And that was very hard on both of us because I felt he was very isolated, even though he was brilliantly looked after. But it was very hard being alone.
That was Angela Edgehill, and before her, Eugene Phillips, speaking to our reporter Killian Sherlock last night. Let's talk now to Sue Shaw, who is CEO of the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament and one of the organisations which was involved in putting this report together. Sue, good morning.
Good morning.
And this report says older people felt cancelled, stripped of their identity, that their lives became a series of instructions during the early part of the pandemic. What can we learn from their experience and from what they have been telling you?
I think the report highlights very strongly the sense of the lack of being listened to, having or being engaged with by the people who are making the decisions. So I think going forward, we need to hear that very strongly and ensure that older people's skill, experience and knowledge informs policy that will affect everyday life for older people. I think a recognition of older people as contributors to society rather than as people who have limited skills or things to offer needs to be really heard. I think you heard Eugene refer to how frightening and frustrating it was to be cocooned, and that message is echoed consistently across all of the organisations.
Yes, and there were some positive effects too outlined there by Eugene around the use of technology and the connectivity that that offered people, but the negative effects vastly outweighed any of the positives.
I think yes. I think older people's ability to cope was highlighted very strongly. I mean, if you're living alone and you've been cocooned and you can go no further than 2K, then your physical, mental, social needs, as well as health needs, as outlined by Angela, can get moved aside and not a priority. And I think in the anxiety and the very difficult circumstances, all of the other determinants of what matter to older people's health and quality of life were very much pushed to the side. I mean, 6 in 10 older people enjoy regular social and leisure activities. They disappeared off the horizon. We all know how important that is for our mental health and well-being. So we would say definitely that hearing that experience and moving forward and saying, yes, we did learn, we did adapt, and how can we support that skill around IT? How can we invest more strongly in it? But equally, I think IT in itself can be a one-on-one experience as opposed to group, so not to see it as the panacea, but certainly a support to address increasing those skills.
Okay, and you mentioned, and the cost of those skills. You mentioned through that word, the C word, as you call it in the report, cocooning, which became a hated term, really, among many elderly people. But yet, cocooning and a lot of the measures which were taken during the early part of the pandemic, they were designed to protect the elderly from harm. Is there an acknowledgement that these things were done for the right reasons, even if they did become something that became unbearable for a lot of people?
Well, there's no doubt about it that while the decisions were made in very difficult and uncertain circumstances, and there is a full appreciation for the work and dedication shown by all hospital staff, as outlined there by Angela, that nonetheless, the concept of elderly from 65 to 100 as one homogenous group that needed to be cocooned, it was 70 actually, but from 70 to 100 to be cocooned, totally disrespected the reality of the levels of ability and health across that large group. No other group would be grouped in such a long period. So I think definitely while there is an acceptance, yes, decisions were made at the time that were meant well. Now the time is to realise we didn't get it totally right. It had long-term effects on people's health, mental health, well-being, that we now need to go back, should, and learn from that experience.
Okay.
And have older people inform the next steps.
All right, so lessons to be learned. Sue Shaw, CEO of the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament, thank you for joining us on Morning Ireland.
Google workers will need to be vaccinated before returning to the office. The policy will begin at its US campuses within weeks and then be rolled out globally for its 144,000 employees. Google's chief executive, Sundar Pichai, said in a blog post that anyone coming to work on our campuses will need to be vaccinated. Let's speak to Richard Grogan. He's head of employment and dispute resolution at Grogan Solicitors here. Richard Grogan, good morning. A spokesperson for Google Ireland has said they had nothing specific to add to the plan, but highlighted that the email also made clear the policy would vary according to local conditions and regulations and would not apply until vaccines were widely available in each location. What do you make of this?
I suppose the position that we had on it a couple of months ago was that the Department of Enterprise, Trade and Employment came out and said that people will be coming back to the workplace, you'll be able to check whether they were vaccinated or not, and if they weren't vaccinated and there was a health and safety risk, that you could go for redeployment of them. The Data Protection Commissioner said then that you can't even ask people in Ireland whether they're vaccinated or not in the workplace. So the whole issue in Ireland is a little bit up in the air. I do believe that probably we're going to see an awful lot more companies looking to go and say, no jab, no job, so that they'll want people vaccinated.
Google CEO also said that people in special circumstances can apply to work from home until the end of this year, and that any Google employee can apply to work from home permanently if they choose or transfer offices. Could the policy of multinationals on vaccinated workers here end up leading the way?
I think it's going to lead the way. I think the reality on it is they have invested so much in this country. There are so many jobs relating to it that I don't see that the government is going to be able to say to the multinationals, well, we don't like the way that you want to operate. I think we're going to probably be moving towards a situation where we're going to be back to what the department had brought in originally, but that would be subject to Neffet's advice. If Neffet said, yes, you can ask people whether they're vaccinated or not and there's a health and safety issue there, then I think probably we will be getting to that sort of situation. They're vaccinated and then you'll do a health and safety assessment. If that health and safety assessment says we have a difficulty with people being in the workplace who are not vaccinated, then we have to redeploy them. Because remember, at the present time, you have to keep all staff 2 metres apart, which we say for somebody like Google and their building, they have 8,000 people in there, having people 2 metres apart just is not practical.
Yeah, take the example of doctors working in hospitals who have to have proof that they've been vaccinated against hepatitis C. So there is precedent here, isn't there?
There is, and the HSE at the present time are looking to have all frontline staff vaccinated. There is precedent in that. The Health Act 1947 was amended at the end in November when they put in a provision there that the Minister for Health can actually direct compulsory vaccination. Now, that's never going to happen, but it actually is in the legislation, and it can end up that that could be used for, we say, the HSE or something like that. But I think you are getting a situation that vaccination is going to be one of the big issues that's the driver here. A lot of the multinationals, particularly in the US, are saying that they want their people vaccinated. Google are not the first, by the way, to have come out with this, saying that they want everybody vaccinated. So I think you're going to see a big press to have vaccination for the workplace, unfortunately, for people.
Have you been approached for advice or to take cases? Are you expecting people to challenge this?
Oh, look, I'll be honest with you and say that it's the law in this area now is as clear as mud at the present time. There is issues here coming up from people who don't want to be vaccinated but want to go back to work, and there's other issues coming up from people who are vaccinated and don't want to work with non-vaccinated people. So it's coming on both sides. There's a perfect storm of litigation arising, and a lot of it is going to come up under the GDPR issue, because if a workplace brings everybody in and says you have to be vaccinated to come in, then everybody else in the workplace knows that you're vaccinated. And as the Data Protection Commission rulings currently stand, you've now disclosed confidential medical information of a sensitive nature to everybody else in the workplace.
Richard Grogan, thank you for speaking to us. That's Richard Grogan, Head of Employment and Dispute Resolution at Grogan Solicitors.
Irish companies secured the highest level of venture capital investment on record in the second quarter of this year. That's according to the latest KPMG Venture Pulse report. It shows that 33 VC deals closed in Ireland during the three-month period, worth over $641 million. We can speak now to Anna Scally, Partner and FinTech Lead at KPMG. Anna, the record investment levels are pretty impressive, given that many Irish companies have faced huge challenges as a result of the pandemic.
Yes, good morning, Jill. We have seen record levels of investment in quarter two, 2021, with, as you say, over $600 million invested in Irish companies. As you know, investment can be quite cyclical. So quarter one this year was fairly modest, with just over $125 million invested in Irish companies. But this quarter, we really bounced back. And this quarter is the strongest that we have on record and surpasses the over $500 million invested in the pre-pandemic second quarters of 2018 and 2019. The rise can be attributed to a number of factors, including, and most importantly, pent-up demand by investors for good quality investments in technology and software companies. And internationally, we're also seeing the impact of robust IPO markets on high valuations.
If we look at the top deals in the second quarter, Irish health and biotech companies were of particular interest to investors. Is that due to COVID?
Well, there's probably no surprise there. We are all very focused on our health and well-being, and the pandemic has really brought that into sharp focus. So investors are very keenly focused on health tech and biotech and the benefits that can be achieved by supporting these companies. And as you say, this quarter, we saw some very significant investments in that area, including over $150 million invested in the Irish health testing company, Let's Get Checked. But it's not just health. There are other sectors that have benefited very significantly this quarter. So other highly digitized businesses have also secured investment. like fintech company Wayflyer, cybersecurity company Teens, and gifting platform AndOpen. Should also probably mention Castus, though in the current COVID environment, Castus are a developer of antimicrobial and antiviral surfaces, surface coatings, and they raised over $6 million this quarter. And drone delivery company Mana raised over $25 million.
Earlier stage companies in Ireland did secure modest investment in the second quarter, but that trend is still continuing where the more established companies are attracting the big investments. Is that a worry?
That's true. There is a global trend there where we're seeing investors focused on later stage companies. Now, I must say it is fantastic to see that we have three fundraisings in this quarter of over $100 million. So great to see very strong, ambitious Irish companies securing those large investments to enable them to scale and compete globally. But yes, it is also critically important for our economy that we are focused on investing on early stage companies as well, because it is critical that we create that funnel of companies capable of growing and scaling internationally. And I think as our economy recovers, it'll be important to make sure that there are funding programs available to earlier stage companies to make sure that we can grow those earlier stage companies. Otherwise, without investor backing at the early stage, I think that will have knock-on effects for many years to come.
Okay, Anna Scally, partner and fintech lead at KPMG. Thanks for that. I'll have more business news at 8:30. Back to you, Gavin.
The Irish rowers' gold medal win in Tokyo this morning came too late for the papers, but Ireland's first medal winners of this year's Olympic Games are pictured on the front pages of the Irish Independent, Irish Times, Irish Examiner, Irish Daily Mirror and Irish Daily Star. Ralph Regal reports in The Independent that the four who won bronze in Tokyo yesterday, Afrik Kyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty, only came together 18 months ago, after rowing chiefs and club coaches came up with the idea of combining four of Ireland's outstanding female rowers in a heavyweight boat crew. Regal says that what proved truly astonishing was how quickly the four women managed to combine into a world-class quartet. A nation rejoices with our history makers in Tokyo, says The Independent in an editorial. Awesome foursome, says The Star. Or heroes, says The Mirror. The Independent leads with a report that the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, has raised hope for an early lifting of COVID restrictions, as new data shows that the young are now hardest hit by coronavirus infections. Professor Philip Nolan, chair of the Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group, is quoted as saying, "This is, at the moment, very much a disease of younger people." The Irish Daily Mail's lead story concentrates on what the paper calls Dr. Houlihan's upbeat assessment and carries the headline, "Freedom is not far away." The Examiner highlights a warning to parents from the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, that they brace themselves for misinformation about childhood vaccines as the vaccination programme for 12 to 15-year-olds starts. He said that parents would be a target in the next 2 to 3 weeks, particularly through social media. The Irish Sun leads with a story about Derek Hutch, due to be released from prison shortly. The Star's main story is about Dave Mahon, who was released from prison yesterday after serving a 5-year sentence for the manslaughter of his stepson, Dean Fitzpatrick. The live entertainment and music sectors are in danger of collapsing following prolonged restrictions, and a clear plan for their return is needed. That's the message in a letter from the Minister for Culture and the Arts, Catherine Martin, to the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, as The Times reports. The Times says that the letter calls for active engagement on how to reopen the sectors using digital COVID certificates or some form of COVID testing, and that when Ms. Martin raised the matter at Cabinet this week, she was backed by the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, and the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, committed himself to examining the issue. Elsewhere in the Times, it was reported that the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, has come under pressure to explain the circumstances of former Minister Catherine Zappone's appointment as a UN Special Envoy on Freedom of Expression. In The Independent, Philip Ryan comments that the appointment was crowbarred into a busy schedule at the last Cabinet meeting before the summer break. He says that Micheál Martin sought to draw a line under the issue, but that Fianna Fáil backbenchers are far from impressed by the deference he shows to Fine Gael. In The Examiner, Daniel McConnell reports that in addition to the €15,000 salary for Ms. Zappone for the United Nations job. It has been confirmed that the two-year post will see her existing ministerial pension enhanced.
Gold for Ireland at the Olympics. At around 2 o'clock this morning in Tokyo, Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan from Skibbereen in County Cork won the lightweight doubles sculls final in rowing. It's a second Olympics medal for Paul O'Donovan. He won silver in Rio 5 years ago. And it's Ireland's second medal of this Olympics, adding to the bronze won by Emer Lam, Afric Kyo, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegarty in the women's four in rowing two. We'll be crossing live to Skibbereen later in the programme and we'll hear from Fintan and Paul. But first, on a golden morning for Ireland, let's go live to Tokyo and our man Des Cahill. 9 years since Ireland's last gold. Katie's in London, Des. We have new history makers this morning.
Indeed we have, and it was worth the wait, Gavin, because the nature of the victory added to the excitement and drama, because Ireland powered to victory, but they edged out Germany, who pushed them all the way. It was a real battle to the end, Italy finishing a distant third. So why not everybody sit back and enjoy this? Only 9 times before have we heard our own Nevean played at the Olympics. This was the medal presentation.
Gold medalists and Olympic champions, Ireland!
Team medalist, Olympic.
What a moment.
Ireland!
Fintan McCarthy.
So, congratulations from the man in the stroke seat to the man in the bow. And likewise, Paul in reverse, McDonovan. Fintan McCarthy and Paul O'Donovan, Olympic champions.
Ladies and gentlemen, the anthem of Ireland.
Are on the beat at the Olympics.
To hear our own Naveen belt out there at an Olympic medal ceremony, it's a very rare thing and just a very special moment.
Yeah, I suppose we've heard it a few times in the past, you know, for the country, but that's nice for sure. I think we were a bit rattled at the time there after the race. We didn't know what was going on, so we could hardly say the words of it at all, but it was nice to hear it all the same. It's a good tune, like.
And Fintan, you were watching this guy medal in Rio, and now you're at the top of the podium with him.
Yeah, it feels pretty good. I reckon, yeah, I'm just proud of, like, the work we've done, you know. We've worked really hard to get this, so it's nice it's paid off.
Listen, the two of you have been on a remarkable run. Like, you've proven to be unbeatable. What makes you unbeatable?
I wouldn't say we're unbeatable. I would probably are beatable, like, but just nobody's done it yet.
How hard was it, or was it hard at all to gel when you came together?
Not really. You know, like, Paul's an absolute animal, so... It was handy enough just to sit behind him and try and emulate that. So I think it's worked, yeah.
Well, listen, lads, enjoy every moment. You're Olympic champions. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Cheers.
Yeah, and after that, the lads are making their way here to our studio in the International Broadcast Centre in Tokyo. And the Golden Boys will be with us here on Morning Ireland in about 25 minutes' time. But I cannot emphasise, as I said earlier, the contrast in mood between the huge high of that gold medal and the devastating sense of disappointment shortly afterwards when Sunita Pushpore, favourite in the women's single sculls, only finished fifth in her semi-final. And so Ireland, former European and world champion, is not in tomorrow's final. She has given her life to it. She's 39 years of age. She moved here in 2006 from Latvia with her husband Casper, both of her children born in Ballincollig in Cork. Had these games gone ahead last year as planned, I'm sure the then world champion would have taken gold, but she's been affected by illness, by injury, and now this devastating disappointment. She couldn't even do an interview afterwards, but Irish Rowing's team manager Fergal O'Callaghan summed up the disappointment.
Sunita is flying the flag for Irish rowing when nobody else was. I think she's been a credit to our country. She's a 2-time world champion and we should never forget that. And she's a proud mother, a proud wife, and she has a lovely family at home that she represents really, really well. And I'm sure she, at this stage, really probably can't wait to get home and be with her family. I feel gutted for her. But she's inspired young boys and young girls all over the country to take up rowing and other sports.
Yeah, I have to say I share that sense of disappointment for Sunita. Now, elsewhere, Aileen Crowley and Monica Dukarska finished fifth in the B final in the women's pair. So that's an 11th place ranking overall. Aoife Casey and Margaret Cremin had a strong showing in the B final of the lightweight women's double sculls. They finished second to Switzerland and an 8th place ranking overall. Sailing now, and what a day here. A win and a second place. In the last few minutes, we had a big win in race 7 for Annalise Murphy in the laser radial class. She has just followed that up with a fantastic second place in race 8. So she's now moved right up to 14th place overall, and two more races remain in the qualifying phase tomorrow. The top 10 go into the medal race, and what you do there is you take your best 9 results into account. So a good day tomorrow, and Annalise can make the final. What a comeback that would be. Meanwhile, the Irish duo of Sean Waterlove and Robert Dixon have given their hopes of making the 49er medal race a major boost. They finished second in the 5th of 12 races behind Denmark. It saw Ireland move up to 8th place overall. And then in race 6, they finished 6th and moving them up to 7th place overall. In golf, it's day one of the Olympics golf tournament here, and high hopes for the Irish with Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry representing Ireland. But after a weather break, play is just back underway. So let's go live to the course and join Gary Moran.
Yeah, thanks, Des. Literally back underway in the last couple of minutes. It was suspended for 2 hours and 20 minutes due to lightning in the area. At that stage, there have been plenty of low scoring and pretty decent conditions, with the Austrian Sepp Straka, who was out in the first 3-ball card, a bogey-free 8-under par 63, which has him 2 ahead of Thomas Peters, Carlos Ortiz and Jazz Jane Wattenanand. The first 13 players on the leaderboard when play was suspended were all from different countries, but they didn't include an Irishman. Rory McIlroy, with 3 birdies and 2 bogeys, is tied 30th on 2-under after 14. Shane Lowry, with 1 birdie and 1 bogey, level after 12, tied 46th in the 60-man field. We are, as you said, just back underway, with McIlroy and Lowry looking to edge closer to Sepp Straka.
Thanks, Gary. In judo news, Ben Fletcher has been beaten in the elimination round of the 100k men's judo. He was beaten via Waza Ari by the Uzbek Mukahamad Kurumov. And despite having previously represented Team GB in Rio, Ben spoke to Joe Stack about the honour of wearing the green of Ireland.
It's massive, you know, like, it gave me a lifeline to come back, you know, like, in different times, you know, like, I'd have been one of the guys who pushing for a medal here, you know. Given the circumstances, I there's not so much I could hope for, you know. It was just a case of get yourself as fit as possible and, you know, and go, really, you know, and it's hard to think about that performance at the moment, you know. I'm hugely, proud to represent Ireland, you know. I've loved every moment of it. Team Ireland have been so good to me. They're like, couldn't have had better support. All my family in Ireland have been like so proud of us getting here, and I just couldn't be more proud, you know, just to be here, you know, given the circumstances. It's not the best, but what can you do?
That's Ben Fletcher. In shooting, Derek Burnett's 5th appearance at an Olympics concluded as he finished 26th in the men's trap qualifying. He posted a score of 118. The Longford shooter missed just one target in each of his final 4 rounds, but won't progress to the top 6 final. Later today, shortly before midday Irish time, Shane Ryan goes in heat 3 of the men's butterfly in the pool. The top 16 across 8 heats will advance to the semi-finals from there. And COVID news starting to come in as well as we prepare for track and field tomorrow. The American double world champion pole vaulter Sam Kendricks has been ruled out after testing positive for COVID-19. With the athletes coming in, there's a little concern across a few camps, and we'll chat about that later.
And we're joined live in studio now by the Minister for Environment, Climate and Communications and leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan. Minister, you're here to talk to us about a new initiative to raise awareness about climate change, but no doubt you'll want to pass on your own congratulations and that of the government to the gold medalists, the heroes in Tokyo.
No, absolutely. And just hear Fintan and Paul, they're talking about the hard work that they've done delivering. but also recognising Sunita Pusper and everything she's done for Irish rowing and the inspiration to young men, boys and girls. I think it's a great morning and I think fair play to them.
Okay, now you are here to talk about a series of creative and artistic projects which are being unveiled this morning with the aim of engaging the public about the changes that people will have to make to address climate change. The projects include coastal light installations, reimagined Bordnamona villages, decarbonisation projects and pop-up energy stores. The cost of this project is €2 million. What do you hope to achieve by it?
It's working with communities. It's starting from the ground up in local communities about how can we make the leap we need to make to address this climate challenge we face. And this summer, more than any previous one, I think, we have a sense of that. We see the climate events, the catastrophic heat events happening in North America, the catastrophic flooding happening in Central Europe, right across the world. We're seeing now events happening, which we'd worried about and predicted and been concerned about, but they're happening in real time, in real life.
So do we need then artistic projects and to be spending €2 million on them to highlight the impact of climate change when, as you say, it's all around us?
Yes, well, firstly, it's going to be very good for those communities, those artistic communities. We need to get them back working. And I think there's a real important job that they have, we all have, in actually thinking about how we approach this and thinking how we communicate it. Thinking how we tell the story of climate change is hugely important for us to make the scale of the leap we need to make. And how we tell this story is, I think, starting by being creative and by working with community and by listening to local farmers, local builders, local towns as to what does it mean for us? What do we do? What can we do? How do we approach it?
Okay, but people might wonder if perhaps that money could be put to better use in, we'll say, retrofitting houses, and that would have a more meaningful and direct impact on climate change.
Yeah, but and some of that money will be used actually with local communities to think how we do it. And how do we go back to earlier on there, I was saying about how the Olympic rowers had inspired our young people. We need to inspire a new generation of young Irish people to actually go into the very trades we need to become the plumbers and the carpenters and the foresters and the builders of the future, and to actually inspire them that this is actually going to be for me, my career, my moment, my golden moment.
And is this
moment.
The way to do it with art installations?
Yes, arts is really important. How we tell the story of what the change we need to make is actually critical. I did a lot of work in previous years back looking at how you communicate about climate change, how you actually get this across. And if it's just done as a kind of purely technocratic, scientific, economic story, it won't appeal to actually what we need to appeal. That same sense of pride we heard with Aaron Navrin here on the radio this morning. We need that sense of pride in the scale of change we're going to meet to face climate change. So absolutely, it's important that we involve our creative, artistic, music and other communities in this change. Okay. They're part of it too.
I want to ask you about a couple of other issues. The Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, spoke yesterday about the possible further easing of COVID restrictions if certain vaccination targets are met. What restrictions are likely to be lifted next?
I think firstly, we have to recognise that those vaccination targets that we have been meeting are phenomenal. We have an incredible story as a country in terms of how we have actually pulled ahead now. For most of the first part of this year, we were looking at the UK and US ahead of us. We've passed out the US and we're about to pass out the UK in terms of level of vaccination. And that, as Dr. Tony Houlihan says, does give us strength. That gives us the ability to do further reopenings. There is a number of small changes that have already come. People announced it from the cabinet meeting earlier in the week in terms of weddings, which we've agreed.
Yes, but what's next? What is he talking about?
Well, firstly, what's next? It has to be the return to work and to college. We already are back in school, but we need real life return. We also need, going back to what I was saying earlier on about our creative industries, they're the industries that have probably been worst hit. Music, arts, entertainment. Not immediately, but we will start planning now in the coming weeks to see how those other industries, the ones who've been worst hit, the likes of the cultural industries, that they too can start planning a return. Now, how we do this is important. We continue with what has worked, that we've done it on a stage, step-by-step basis. We don't reverse. So we do it in a way where if we open something up, we're not going to have new restrictions and therefore coming back. So better to do it in a planned way. The next couple of weeks, I suppose, is still a very tight and is still a period when we do have to be careful. We've high levels of transmission. There's 1,400 cases yesterday. There's 26 additional people going into hospital every day. So it's not, there shouldn't be a signal of, oh, well, you know, it's all over. It's not.
Okay. But specifically, Minister, I want to ask, because I know the Irish Times is reporting today that your colleague Catherine Martin has written to the Minister for Health calling for the reopening of the live music and entertainment sector using digital COVID certificates. Is that something that you support and that you want the government to look at now?
Yes, and we agreed in government the other day that later on this month and planning it out into the autumn period, we need the same for those industries. We need to bring them back in the same organised, step-by-step, safe way.
When do you think they could come back?
I'm not going to give a date here for that today, because we do, as Catherine said in her letter, what we need to do is start planning that, start getting the everything in place so we can do it safely, so we can do it in the same stage reopening way that we've done, and as we have successfully done the other sectors, the other industries.
When will the Cabinet meet to review all of this and to decide when workplaces should return and live music and entertainment should return?
The Cabinet Subcommittee on COVID will be meeting through August. So we're meeting again, I think 6th of August is the next meeting. And then we have regular meetings right through the summer period. Full Cabinet then comes back later in August, and it's in that sort of time frame that I expect we'll be able to start setting out, here's the further reopening process.
And do you expect that workplaces will return, people will return to work in September?
I do. And I think it's important. I think it's important. Part of the health picture in this, as we've said right the way through, is also our mental health and also the health of our society. The importance you get when you are able to come back into the office, and a lot of people are back in work, but for those who haven't, those office and other workers who haven't, I think it is an important part of their health to be able to have. And it won't be again, it won't be everyone all back on 1st of September, but I think we do need to start planning for that. It'll be done probably in a hybrid basis. It'll be done on a stage basis. And yes, I think that return to work is also part of this this gradual safe transition that we've been engaged in.
Can I ask you about the appointment of Catherine Zappone as Special Envoy for Freedom of Expression? Were you happy with the way that appointment was made?
No, I don't think anyone was happy. And I think the Minister of Foreign Affairs himself admitted that in hindsight he would have announced that and differently. But
Why did you agree to it then at Cabinet if you weren't happy?
Because I've also experienced with Catherine Zappone, the area she's going to work in is an area where she has real expertise, where she's shown over many years to be an absolute leader. So,
did you voice any concerns at Cabinet about the process here?
I'm not going to discuss what was said at Cabinet. You know I can't do that. But I mean, the Taoiseach was out yesterday, I think, acknowledging that process wasn't appropriate.
But I'm just wondering, if from a Green Party perspective, your party released a statement last night saying it's important that the appointment of envoys is looked at to ensure a more transparent system is in place. If a transparent system was not in place on this occasion, why didn't you raise it at Cabinet where you have a voice?
I'm not going to discuss what is said at Cabinet, but I did, with the Taoiseach and Taoiseach, shared my views. They know exactly what our position is. But what we agreed on is, despite those misgivings on process, that actually Catherine Zappone, in the work that has been done here, is a very good candidate. She will be an excellent envoy, and that I also shared with them.
Would you prefer, I mean, we know in this case Catherine Zappone seems to have suggested herself for the job. Would you prefer if positions like this were advertised in the future so that people could apply?
Yes, I think that whole process, as I said, is not something that that I think we could learn from. But is Catherine Zappone well qualified for what is a limited role? It's backing up work she's already doing and us being able to benefit and avail
of that. But future positions like this, you think they should be advertised openly, do you?
I think in all positions, in all jobs we have, the more open and the more transparent it is in terms of what sort of positions available, yes. But this is a part-time position. It is working, I think, for about 50, 60 hours a year. But those 50, 60 hours, which Catherine Zappone has, I think she will do a very good job at.
All right. Minister for Environment, Climate and Communications and leader of the Green Party, Eamon Ryan, thank you for joining us on Morning Ireland.
RTE Radio 1 Sport with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
We'll be live in Tokyo in a few minutes with Ireland's newest gold medalists, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy. But first, let's catch up on the rest of today's sport with John Murray. Morning, John.
Good morning to you, Justin. Yes, Bohemians and Dundalk are in Europa Conference League action tonight. There will be a crowd of 8,000 at the Aviva Stadium for their second leg tie against Dudelange of Luxembourg. The Gypsies carry a 1-0 lead from the first leg. Dundalk, meanwhile, are in Estonia, where they will take on Levadia Tallinn. The first leg finished 2-2. Celtic are out of the Champions League after a 3-2 aggregate defeat to Midtjylland of Denmark last night. In Gaelic games, Cork have retained the Munster under 20 hurling title. In the final at Páirc Uí-Chaoimh, Cork defeated Limerick by 126-124. The Electric Ireland Leinster minor final ended Kilkenny 115, Wexford 210, a 2-point win for Kilkenny. The results of the Ulster minor football quarterfinals were Armagh 12 points, Derry 11 points. Donegal won 9, Monaghan 10 points, Fermanagh won 12, Cavan won 11, and Tyrone 3-16, down 9 points. On day 3 of the Galway Festival, Royal Rendezvous won the feature race, the Galway Plate. The 5-1 favourite was ridden by Paul Townend and trained by Willie Mullins. Today, the main focus is on the Galway Hurdle, and in a moment, we'll be joined by Ted Walsh. But let's hear from the trainer of one of today's fancied runners, Belfast Banter, Peter Fahey.
The big plus for us is the ground is drying out. He loves a bit of nice ground, and in fairness, I suppose looking at the race on the Monday evening, I was a bit disappointed that the ground had got so soft, but drying out ground definitely helped him. His work is very good, and I think he'll run a huge race.
He's a lovely weight in his back as well. He's not the biggest horse in the world. Would that be a help to him?
Yeah, look, it definitely is. I suppose being the right hand of the scales, but he's 10-13. It's a lovely weight. Hopefully there's plenty of pace in it, which looks like it on paper, and if they go a good gallop, I think he'll run a huge race as long as we get the brakes and a bit of luck to run.
And we can't beat course form. He's won his maiden hurdle down here.
No, look, at like last year, I suppose he struggled in a lot of tracks to win, and to come out and win a maiden hurdle here was very good. So course track is definitely a bonus on our side.
And that's Peter Fahey talking there to Dave Keenan, and we're joined now by Ted Walsh. Ted, good morning.
Morning, John.
Great morning to be Irish as well, isn't it?
Oh, great morning. That was a great result last night. Everyone very proud of him. Great for Skipper Reeve.
And the rest of the country.
Yes.
We'll all join in the celebration of it anyway.
We'll all count ourselves as West Corkmen.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, Ted, on to matters at Galway this evening, the Galway Hurdle. What do you reckon?
It's a wide open race. As you just said, Peter Fahey talked about his own horse there, Belfast Banter, a winner at the County Hurdles, chance him a huge chance. Willie, you mentioned earlier on, 1-2 in the plate yesterday. He's got a strong hand with top weight Saturday Air, Patrick on board. Paul, the stable jockey, Paul Townend, goes for CL Dinage for JP McManus. And Burning Victory, young Jack Foley, claiming 7, now winning a chance as well. Shark Hanlon, Sky Easton, he's a chance. Noel Mead with a great record for the meeting with Jesse Evans, a big chance as well too. A local man, Norman Lee, with sole contender in a big race in the Hurl a couple of years ago, big chance. Magic Tricks for Sneezy Foster, and Hearts of Trumps for Desi McDonough. Lots of chances. The horse I think that has a bit of value in is the previous winner, Tudor City. You're 25-1, 33-1 shot there with Bet365 and Paddy Powers. And he's a chance. He's a big chance. I think he won't be out of the first 3 or 4.
Okay, and what about the rest of the card?
Oh, it's wide open. I mean, I'm kind of concentrating on the Hurl at the moment. There's plenty of horses there with decent chances. The Hurl for me is the feature race. The rest of it is a middle of the road. Plenty of horses with chances, but nothing that I could recommend here.
Just one interesting point made by Patrick Mullins in his column in the Irish Independent this morning. The fact that just one English horse has actually come to the Galway races this year. Well, are you surprised by that?
No. We give them such a hiding in their own backyard, they're afraid to come over here. there's not too many fellas now when you get a scorching like we give them at Cheltenham and Liverpool, want to come here and take it home again. Yeah, flat lads came over all right, and there have a few horses running, they're running well. But the junt lads, I think, have their tails firmly between their legs at the moment.
So that's the reason, do you think?
I would definitely say that's the reason.
Wasted journey to Galway.
Yeah, well, as I said, if you get a hide in your own backyard, you're certainly not going to win your next door neighbour's one.
And it's nice to see the crowd there as well, isn't it?
Ah, it's great. It's great. It adds a great bit to it. I know there's only 1,000 people there. They look like more. But they added a bit of music there as well last night. There was definitely a bit of life coming back into the country anyway. No, I wouldn't have thought 12 months ago when I was in Galway with only 5 or 6 of us there that we'd be 12 months still wearing masks and going around like as if we were Japanese or something. But that's the way it is. And I honestly think that some people will never remove masks again, but hopefully we'll get back to normality.
That's so say all of us. Ted, thank you for joining us. And a reminder that Ted will be part of RTE2's coverage of the Galway Hurdle and the rest of the card at Galway. The coverage begins at 5.
We'll not get tired of saying this. Gold for Ireland at the Olympics in Tokyo. Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy from Skibbereen in the lightweight double sculls in rowing. They're live on Morning Ireland with our man Des Cahill in Tokyo.
They certainly are. They have their medals in their pockets, which is very unglamorous in the studio here. Well, gentlemen, it falls on me on behalf, people are getting up at home in Ireland, to say on behalf of everybody, the rowing community, the general sports fans, the non-sports fans, shops and factories, everywhere is going to be a happy place today because of what you've done. So thank you for what you've done and congratulations. Now, I know you didn't do it for all of us in Ireland, you did it for yourselves, but can I ask you, first of all, maybe Fintan, would you take us through the race? Like, Germany and Italy went off. Tell us your tactics relative to that.
We kind of always expect them to have a quick start. You know, we've been racing them all year, and that's generally how the races have gone. The Germans, the Italians get out fairly quickly, and then we try and reel them in. So it was kind of, you know, the usual, really. And then I think we got past the Italians first, so I was just thinking, okay, this is good. This is what's supposed to be happening.
Do you talk to each other much during a race?
Not too much now. We might say the odd word.
Fintan says, he just says go or something, yeah, like this. Yeah. I can't talk at all. Yeah, I'm not great at talking at the best of times, but Fintan, he takes all the control then during the race.
And you were happy with where you were at that stage?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of just what's happened previously, so I wasn't too worried. And the second half, we were coming back to the Germans, but they were sticking ahead of us. I think we might have got slightly ahead of them,
yeah,
around the 1500 meter mark, and then it was all go from there, really, just
full on.
Yeah,
but I was amazed because Paul, you said afterwards, when you asked about your success, you said you work hard, but surely every crew works hard. Now, I know you're not here to say, well, we're fantastic as well, and it's not your style, but there has to be something more than just hard work to be Olympic champions.
I suppose, depends on how far deep you want to go into things. Like, there's boats and coaches and support staff and all this type of thing. And
so what, you have the best boat and the best coaching staff?
We have a good boat anyway, and the best coach, world coach of the year there, 2018, yeah. Dominic Casey, yeah. So we can't complain with that either.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes into, like, a lot of sports science, physiology, biomechanical testing, and then George's, the mother at home and the father and the grandmother and all the support they've been giving us and all throughout the years. And, like, you need so much luck as well in that, like, just say that we were actually born in the place that we were born, and there was a rowing club nearby, and that, say, myself and Gary got a bit of luck then going to Rio, and that we were brothers, and so we both liked the same sport and did that, and then lucky that Fintan was there and watching and in the rowing club, and then that he trained really hard and made it into the boat, and just a whole load of different events then like that, and you can't kind of summarize it all, like, but
all of those things together.
Yeah, all together. But fundamentally, like, it's just, I suppose we did an awful lot of training, like, really, that's kind of the main ingredient.
But you mentioned the boat. So, Fintan, you rode with your brother Jake, and you rode with Gary, and you and Gary got silver at the Olympics. And then another guy comes into the boat. Basically, you all had to compete for two seats. Isn't that effectively what happened?
Yeah, it was. So, I think we all know, it was myself and Gary there in Rio, and again for a couple of years afterwards and stuff. But then, as Fintan and his brother were getting older, and there was other people kind of challenging and stuff as well, that in the trials then, like, when we were mixing it up, that it was 2019 then, myself and Fintan came out on the top. And then we were trialing again this year, and George was very, very close, like, and well, unfortunately, Fintan's brother Jake, he had a bit of a back injury there last year, so that hampered his preparations an awful amount, so he didn't make it then. But I think then, like, it's good then for the boat that I suppose, like, that everyone is open to opening up the selection and not just say having me and Gary against Fintan and Jake because we're rubber brothers, so we kind of mix it out and try and get the best combination, which
You brought the best out of yourselves, which was fantastic and tough on the lads, but the joy of you winning is great. Can I ask you, Fintan, about your future? You have a degree in physiology. Paul is studying medicine. So what's your future?
I suppose we'll stick at the rowing for another few years anyway.
You're in no rush to go work.
No rush. The next Olympics is actually the last. It's going to be the last one for our event.
Yeah.
So we'll have to try and go out with a bang.
So you'll go again.
Yeah.
And Paul, you're so relaxed, and you're famously so relaxed, and you're studying to be a doctor. I'd be terrified going to you as a doctor. I'd be afraid you'd just say, "Ashley, you're grand," and I'd need a second opinion. Where are you at with the medical studies?
So I suppose I'm going into third year now of the graduate entry program there in UCC, and they've been very accommodating as well. In fairness, they've been good to me and gave me some time off there, so I did a little bit up until kind of December last year, and then they left me off, but I'll have to pick it up again now once I get home. There'll be no let up, but that's all right too.
Do you find that difficult, intense study and intense training?
There's a lot of study to do, and then you're trying to do a lot of training as well. So, but I like both things, you know. And so when you're interested, and then you take a lot of enjoyment from that, and just trying to balance it too, it's kind of good fun as well. You'd be a little bit worried there that you make a bags of everything of the whole lot at some stage, but I kind of held it together just about so far, which is good, thankfully.
Indeed it is. And Fintan, how long do you think it'll be before you get back in the boat? Do you want a long break?
Well, we actually have a race coming up next week or the week after in the UK Henley Royal Regatta. Course, we're going to give that a crack. So I guess it won't be too long till we're back rowing.
There'll be no break at all. Your sister was on the programme earlier, Fintan. She said you weren't a sporty kid.
Yeah, that's probably fair to say.
Is it?
Yeah.
What age were you when you began rowing?
I think I was around 15.
That's late.
Yeah. It was more so just, you know, I don't think I found any sport that I enjoyed or was really good at until rowing came along. So then when I found that, I think, I just ran with it. And
well, it won't get better than the medal you have in your pocket.
Yeah.
Listen, we're really thrilled. We're grateful to you for coming in and saying hello to us. It means a lot. You're going to be on television at 9 o'clock for people who want to switch over because, as I say, you've brought great joy to us all. So, Paul, Fintan, congratulations to you, to your club, to your families and your fantastic coach. Thanks a million for joining us here at Morning Ireland.
Thanks for having us, Des. Appreciate it.
Gibberine is an Olympic village this morning. Let's go there now. It's the hometown of the gold medalists, Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy. And our reporter, Gail Conway, is joined by two members of Skibbereen Rowing Club, Captain Sean O'Brien and TJ Ryan, the Rowing Club Secretary. Gail, good morning. What's the atmosphere like there in Skibbereen this morning?
Good morning. It was still kind of quiet this morning, but the town looks stunning, full of bunting and flags. It's done up gorgeous, absolutely fabulous. All support and all the shop windows. And I'm out here at the Rowing Club this morning on the banks of the island, and young people have turned up for training this morning. So it's lovely to see the flurry of activity out on the river course gone before we knew it. But I am joined here now by Sean O'Brien, the club captain. And Sean, what's been your reaction to the win, listening to the guys there?
It's surreal, difficult to believe that it's actually happening. We've been preparing for it all along, but now it's happened. It is, it's something out of this world. It's like a dream, but it's actually real.
But it has actually happened.
It actually happened, yes, indeed, yeah.
And how long do you know Paul and Fintan? Do you know them since they're children?
I'd know them since they were kids, yeah. They were, you know, very, very good, sprightly guys from the day one. They were very good.
Spirited children?
Absolutely, yeah. It shows, you can see the glint in their eyes, you know, and they still have it. That same glint they had it when they were kids, 10 years old.
And what does it mean for the club and for the town? It'll be a big boost, no doubt.
It is a big boost to the town. I'd say commercially, it's financially a benefit. A lot of people come around. After Rio the last time, we had an awful lot of people that used to call just looking for Skibbereen Rowing Club. There's no signpost, but they find the place. And they Google now. Mr. Google is able to steer them in the right direction. But we'd have people from all over the world coming here. And that definitely reflected in the town. People in the town said their businesses did absolutely improve after Rio. The same thing is going to happen again, hopefully. The people of Skibbereen great to support us, and it's lovely to know that something will go back to the business people that have been supporting us all the years.
And it's great excitement and happy news after the year that we've had.
Oh, it is incredible, yeah. I mean, all the kids will be buzzing after this.
Great, thank you very much. Thank Sean you. O'Brien, club captain. I'm also joined here now by TJ Ryan, the club secretary. So lots of young rowers arriving here this morning. Are you expecting a big influx of people taking up the sport now? Will there be a knock-on effect?
Well, normally there is, because after every Olympic cycle, you always get a big burst from the television. Plus now we have the medals, we have the added publicity. So hopefully it should bring a few more in, and hopefully we'll get more Olympians in the future.
And the club had 6 members in Tokyo this year. Is there something in the water around here that's just growing brilliant rowers?
Well, we have Peckham Spring underneath the shed, and we have about 10 miles of water to train on, so they can just paddle all the way down. We often thought we should build a bottling plant instead of a rowing club.
And can you, like, have you any idea, TJ, of what's going to happen with the homecoming? Now, when the guys came home from Rio, the O'Donovan brothers, you had 15,000 people here in the town. What's going to happen this year?
Well, basically, we're kind of very caught up with the restrictions at the moment, so we don't know what's going to happen. I know the lads have to go into quarantine when they come back from Japan, so hopefully we'll be able to do something of some sort. But as I said, it's wait and see, with consultation between guards and departments and that.
Sure, and a bronze and a gold in 1 week for the club. Do you ever think you'd see it in your lifetime?
I never thought we'd see the full suite here of gold, silver and bronze. It's amazing, and Emily has been so good, and everybody that supports the clubs, from sponsors down to the committee members, have driven this club for years and continue to drive it.
Brilliant, and that's a huge congratulations to everyone here at the club. Thank you very much, TJ Ryan, club secretary. Gavin.
Thanks, Gail. That's Gail Conway live in Skibbereen.